Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak Showcase Spotlight episode number 2 here on SpeakGeekSpeak.com. This is episode 15 of the Geek Speak podcast, and joining me today, I am lucky enough to be joined by Rob Welkner for the first time from CoinOp.tv. Rob, how are you?
Hello, Ian. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. Now, tell us a little bit about CoinOp.tv.
Okay. Well, actually, you can drop the dot. I just call it CoinOp TV, and the URL has the dot in it.
But that works.
It's a video podcasting show on retro and arcade gaming. I interview gamers, designers, collectors, artists, anything to do with old school games and the love of them.
That sounds good to me, man. And like I've said before in previous podcasts, I checked out a couple episodes and I absolutely loved them. So great job, man.
Well, thank you.
Glad we
could touch base on that.
You are quite welcome. Also joining us today, veteran of the show, considering that he's the only person I've had on twice, Toby Cook from Seattle. Toby, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ian. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Doing pretty well here. Enjoying the fact that I can walk to my college during this transit strike.
Yeah, it's been pretty messy for you guys out there.
You are not kidding.
I've been following the news, so...
Yeah, well, I had to postpone my trip by a day, so I'm actually going to be heading over to Massachusetts on Friday as opposed to Thursday, but we'll see how things go.
I think everything will go fine.
It better, let's put it that way. Well, anyway, like I said, today's Showcase Spotlight is going to be focused mainly on retro gaming, as that is Rob's specialty, and I've been a retro guy for most of my life, and Toby's played it all, so I think that pretty much makes us pretty even there. And I want to start things off with the arcades, as I know that that's Rob's main specialty. And also, that's where I started out, and I'm not quite sure. Where did you start off in gaming, Toby? Did you go arcade first and then consoles, or did you hit consoles first?
I actually started with the arcades as well. My first arcade game, honestly, was Ms. Pac-Man. I started kind of late, you know, not too late, but played Ms. Pac-Man. What's funny is I lived overseas for 3 years. I lived in Italy, and that's where I got most of my exposure to video games. We had a little rec center down by where my dad worked that was owned by a bunch of Italians, and they had some of the coolest games there. They had that was where I first saw Dragon's Lair. I played Bubble Bobble. I got hooked on Rally X. You know, I played pretty much everything that was out there. It was still all English dialogue and stuff like that, so they just imported them.
Wow, that's pretty lucky over there to be able to get such great games over in Italy.
Yeah, well, I don't know how far behind they were behind the Americans, but one of the things that I loved is, you know, it was 200 lira, which was about 25 cents.
Okay, so. That's cool. What about you, Rob? What would you call? Do you remember what your first arcade game was?
Oh boy, you know, probably Space Invaders back in the day, or Galaxian. Those two sort of started it off, and then of course Pac-Man and Galaga and Robotron just kind of kept me dropping quarters left and right.
Yeah.
When I grew up in Brooklyn, I would shovel out cards for quarters and then rush right over there to the arcade and spend them right away.
where in Brooklyn are you from, by the way? I forget.
Oh, I grew up in Park Slope.
Oh, okay. All right. So right around that area. That works.
Yeah. This is great. We're a couple old Brooklyn boys, and now I'm in California, so it's good to be in touch still.
Yeah, and there you go. And you know, Toby spent some time in Italy, so he knows how Brooklyn is.
Italy's got a huge retro community these days. I get hits and emails from people over there and collectors and stuff. It's pretty crazy how in Europe... You know, those guys are still going nuts for arcade collecting and stuff.
I can imagine, yeah. Well, I mean, me being the youngest of the bunch here, I started off basically with the Street Fighter II and that sort of stuff, because obviously I started a little later. Mm-hmm. But from there, I tried to find some of the smaller ones, you know, because I love being able to pay, you know, still 25 cents for games like Pac-Man and Space Invaders and stuff like that at the arcades that I was hit, and the laundromats, obviously. Because over in Brooklyn, that's sometimes the best place you can go for your arcade gaming. Just go to a random laundromat, and they'll have about five or six games there that you can just spend your time on for a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah, laundromat or car service.
Oh, yeah. And there was actually there was a pool hall that I used to go to over here in Brooklyn called Primetime Billiards. It's not there anymore, but half the time, my dad and I would be shooting pool, and then halfway through, I'd be like, oh, hey, look, they have that over there. Nudge, nudge. Give me 50 cents. Nudge, nudge. And that's the way things would go from there. So, would you consider what game would you say considered basically like hooked you on gaming when you were younger?
Probably not to sound cliche, but probably Pac-Man. That was one of the ones that like I learned how to do the pattern and stuff, so I could sort of play for like you know a couple hours on one quarter. So that was a big treat. I mean, I know you know guys who I interview that are like real champs. They kind of consider pattern people kind of, you know, the doghouse of video game players and stuff. But, you know, hey, when you're like, you know, 10 or whatever, you know, that's the only way to get by.
Yeah, sure. What about you, Toby?
I have to say Donkey Kong 3. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I got really good at it because it was the only game there that I could put in, like, maybe 25, 50 cents and sit there and play for an hour or two and see what I could get for a high score.
All right, Toby, what's the significance of Donkey Kong 3 as compared to the other ones?
Donkey Kong 3 was the one with the Stanley, the bug zapper.
All right, very good. Yeah, I was curious if you remember that starred old Stanley and not Mario.
Yeah, it was Stanley. I mean, well, what's funny is that's the first. That's the only Donkey Kong game never to feature Mario.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Well, one of the ones that wasn't Donkey Kong Country, that is, you know, once it branched on to the newer ones, obviously wasn't really much Mario going on, but the original Donkey Kongs, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I'd say it was more of a console game that hooked me on gaming. I'd have to go Super Mario Brothers 3. Honestly, when I first got my Nintendo when I was a kid. My grandparents got me two games. Obviously, the Duck Hunt Mario Brothers combo, which came with the NES, and Mario Brothers 3. And once I got good at Mario Brothers, I switched over to Mario Brothers 3. And that was the game that showed me just how intense gaming could be and how addictive it could be. Because I spent so many hours in front of that television trying to get past each and every level. And eventually resorting to, yeah, I'll admit it, Game Genie and stuff like that to, you know, get past things that I couldn't get past. And it sucked the life out of me, you know, and that made me the person I am today.
Was that the first one with the Yoshi, or was she or he in number two? I kind of forget.
That was, you know what, the first one with Yoshi was actually Land, Super Mario Land for the SNES.
Super Mario World.
World, there you go. Super Mario World for the SNES. That was the last one on the NES, actually. Super Mario Bros. 3.
Oh, okay.
Super Mario 3 was the raccoon suit.
Yes.
Where you could fly for the first time.
Oh, okay, with the little tail, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with the little tail.
Okay.
You also had the Tanuki suit. You have the frog suit where you can go underwater.
And I loved unlocking Sledgehammer Mario.
Oh, Hammer Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, because Sledgehammer Mario was basically, like, as long as you were Sledgehammer Mario, you could destroy absolutely anything in that game. But, yeah. Now, obviously, once the late 80s and early 90s came around, it was a bit of a fallout with arcades, and it hasn't really recovered since. What do you think were the mitigating factors in this fallout with arcades?
Consoles.
Yeah?
To be honest, yeah. I think console gaming took over for the arcades. When people could play the games in their home, what reason did they have to go to the arcades?
True. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, consoles and technology. I mean, like when Atari 2600 was releasing games, they just looked so horrible that they never had a chance, really, you know, to compete with an arcade game that looked glorious at the time and sounded awesome. Yeah, once PC gaming and NES and stuff like that started to kind of catch up and people realized, you know, they can get more hooked. And plus, you know, a lot of the game designer people sort of, you know, disappeared and, you know, they kind of went on and did other things. And you know, you just had, like, hack jobbers sort of piling out games as fast as possible, you know, with some sort of, you know, logo on it or something that, you know, didn't have like the specific quality and time and handling that sort of took into making like a classic game where, you know, I mean, when the guys who designed like Pac-Man and Space Invaders, you know, they were sitting around dreaming about like how to improve upon games like Breakout or something, and how to improve a Breakout, and that's how Space Invaders started, was, you know, have blocks coming down on you instead of just staying in one spot. But, you know, in the 90s it was like, all right, we're going to just adapt, you know, a game for some cartoon or something, and, you know, so that didn't help either.
So do you think that if these guys would have stuck around and maybe put some more time and effort into it, the arcade industry might have turned out a little differently?
Well, a lot of them stuck around. They just moved over to, like, you know, consoles or things like that, you know, and some of them, I mean, well, you know, money is always a factor, too, with you know, storage of games and arcades and paying a quarter versus, like, buying a game for, like, $30 and owning it and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think money sort of factors in a lot.
How about you, Toby? Do you think anything differently that arcade companies could have done would have changed things for them, or do you think it was just basically just consoles or nothing at that point?
Well, I think, honestly, you know, if you look at the first console to actually, you know, do proper arcade translations, yeah, I'd have to say ColecoVision is kind of where that whole thing started. You know, when people could buy a cartridge for like $20-$30 that had almost arcade perfect translation of their favorite arcade game, you know, there was no reason for them to, you know, go to the arcades. And the problem is the arcade developers, you know, Stern, Bally, the companies that were around at the time, didn't develop new games to really, you know, grab the public interest. I mean, it's not until the mid-90s, you know, where you started to see, you know, the whole arcade renaissance, you know, with games like Street Fighter II and Mortal Kombat, that, you know, you started to see, you know, things that should have been done in the 80s, you know, to grab that attention, you know, start to happen.
Yeah, and once that attention started shifting back to the video games, to the arcades, that is, you saw certain arcade companies trying to then make consoles, and the consoles didn't exactly do too well. For example, the Neo Geo, which was incredibly overpriced and, you know, didn't exactly last around too long, even though it had pretty much perfect arcade translations. It just, they couldn't do it with that price tag.
Well, Neo Geo is unique in that respect, because the system you got at home was the exact same one you got in the arcade.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The Neo Geo platform lasted over 10 years in the arcades. I mean, it wasn't up until they got bought by Playmore, like within the last year, that they actually, you know, switched away from using the Neo Geo platform. I mean, it was a pretty landmark for 2D gaming platform. I mean, they did so much with it. You know, that gave us games like Fatal Fury, you know, Samurai Showdown, a lot of things like that.
Yeah, well, do you think that other arcade companies could have went out there and maybe put their arcade software out there as a console, or would it have cost nearly as much money as a Neo Geo did?
I think other companies could have done it. I know Sega certainly, you know, went from doing arcade games to doing consoles. I mean, they didn't last as long as most of the other companies, but, you know, look at the Sega Master System and the Genesis to the Saturn and Dreamcast, and they actually, you know, built themselves a console division. Atari really, you know, took off from that point, too. They started out in the arcades and eventually went to consoles.
How about you, Rob? Do you think there's anything out there that maybe quite possibly could have sold their stuff to the home audience that didn't, or was it basically just either arcade or nothing for these companies?
As far as what, like the rise of the consoles?
Basically,
stuff?
Yeah. Like any other companies that could have possibly capitalized on the console gain that were initially arcade companies that didn't.
Yeah, well, like Toby said, the Coleco one was pretty good for a translation early on. You know, well, gosh, it seems like companies back in the day would just sort of like, revolve around holidays and like what they can release for Christmas, and nobody seemed to have like their brain on during the year, for what to come up with as far as imagination stuff. I don't know. There was sort of like a scare, like when there was like the crash of the early with the Atari and stuff like that, the crash, they can say 84 or something like that, or
yeah,
before NES, everybody got kind of scared, and companies sort of sold their licenses out and things like that. And, I don't know, if it wasn't for, Mario on NES there, we'd probably still be hanging around arcades, well, maybe not, still now, but for a few more years, I think, because I don't think Duck Hunt would have kept us all, away from the arcade. But it definitely helps when you have, like, an awesome game to sit at home on your couch and play with your friends. That's, that's probably the most important thing, is the best game.
Well, I don't know about you, but I would have loved to play Duck Hunt in the arcade. I mean, with that gun and all that, that would have been pretty fun arcade action over there. In fact, that pretty much is the NES game that, in my opinion, took the most from the arcade and transferred it over to the console.
Well, it's funny that you mention that, because Nintendo actually, with their PlayChoice 10, when they put that out, they actually took an NES and put it into an arcade cabinet.
I think I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and you paid like 25 cents for, like, you could play for like 10 minutes or something like that. And they had a pretty good selection of games. They did that with the NES as well as the Super NES. They did a Super System one that had just a small selection of games like Addams Family Values and Super Tennis and a couple of other ones. And they had Super Mario World as well on there. With the PlayChoice 10, they actually had like Super Mario 3, and they actually, were trying to, get people interested in the game, so maybe, they play the game and look for it and take it home.
So in that way, there was still a symbiotic relationship between consoles and arcades at that point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Sega even, with Sonic the Hedgehog, they tried to do some arcade stuff with that.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, actually, yeah. And well, I remember Sonic the Heroes was the first game that was exclusively arcade that came out from Sega. There was never really a console translation of that. But then, of course, there was Sonic the Hedgehog that you could actually go to the arcade and physically play, which was there for a couple of years.
Yeah. I didn't think the Sonic game that Sega put out for the arcade was very good. The Sonic Heroes, the one you're talking about, the fighter one.
Yeah,
that wasn't too bad. That used a lot of the Virtua Fighter style of combat. It was fun. It was cute, and I think they actually were going to do a Dreamcast port of that at one point.
Yeah, but then the Dreamcast crashed before they really could.
Right.
Yeah. Now, in your opinion, what could Atari have done differently? Because to this day, I'm still actually sort of upset that Atari never really made the shift after that, enormous fall of the 80s and never really survived as a company past, the incarnation that it is today with a couple games that it comes out. Obviously, Atari was one of the heavy hitters, and now you barely ever hear their name anymore. I mean, if they had made that partnership that almost happened between Nintendo, would we still be hearing Atari's name today?
Well, Atari's always going to have that legacy, I don't know what Rob's opinion is on this, but Atari, did eventually branch out beyond just doing the 2600. I mean, you have 2600, 5200, 7800, then all the, they actually branched out into doing home computers. I actually owned a Atari 1200 XL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I used to play Joust on that. They had game cartridges that you can plug into it. I'd sit there with my 1200 XL plugged into my TV. I'd sit there and I'd play Joust. I'd play Jumpman Jr., a bunch of games, and they had joysticks and everything. So they attempted to take the personal computer market and combine it with the console market and try and capture both audiences. That lasted until, I want to say, about 89, 90. Around that time, they started moving back into the console market. They relaunched the 2600. And they relaunched the 5200 using one of their personal computer designs with the 130XE. I don't know if Rob remembers that at all.
You remember that, Rob? Or?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I remember some of those. I was trying to think of...
I have a pretty good history of Atari.
What was the Atom? Was that for an Atari or something?
That was ColecoVision.
Oh, ColecoVision was the Atom. Okay.
Came out in 84. That was when they did, like, Buck Rogers and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. They, Atari, well, Atari is sort of like, a lot of history that I sort of picked up from them is a DVD called Once Upon a Time Atari. It's made by Scott Warshaw, who did some of the classic games like E.T. and...
oh, God.
And he actually did some good ones, too. I can't remember the other one.
I like how you corrected that.
But he did a really good one, but I apologize for getting the title, but... that disc, like, I mean, the vibe that I got was that, like, Atari didn't want to pay anybody, so, like, that's when, like, you know, a lot of the real smart guys, like, decided to jump ship, and then they started Activision, which, of course, we know Activision.
Yeah.
So, if you didn't know that about, you know, that Activision was just ex-Atari people, then, you know, that's kind of what happened was, they kind of jump shipped, formed their company, and good for them, because, you know, that was sort of like the first company that was ever doing anything like kind of by themselves for a console and stuff. I don't know, Atari seemed to have like a strange like releasing kind of thing where like they'd sort of hold on to a console and then kind of pop it out like a few years later when like, you know, the ColecoVision looked already awesome and Intellivision looked pretty good. Then they'd release like the 5200, which still looked like crap or something. And you know, I don't know. I think they were always trying to hold on to, like, what they already had and work on their library of, like, crappy graphics and stuff and you know, rather than kind of push the technology and stuff. And I'm sure that must have pissed off all the designers and stuff. They were probably just so anxious to get on new technology. And, you know, that's probably why motivated them to jump ship, too.
So they basically just had the idea that if they kept putting out the same thing, people would keep buying it?
Yeah, I think the Atari, at least with the 2600, you know, I think they were just thinking, like, look, we'll slap a title of a game that's really popular, like Space Invaders. We'll make, like, 200 variants of this game and put it on the box and say, like, you know, this box has, you know, 200 games. And it's just, you know, variations, which is so silly. I mean, I remember as a kid getting those and, like, trying each one and thinking, you know, oh, this is crap. But I don't think they had sort of, you know, I mean, there was something sort of missing with, you know, I mean, now companies are like, they're all, you know, Sony and Microsoft, that's all they think about is how we can push, you know, bandwidth or graphics or whatever and stuff. And but early on, Atari was probably thinking, hey, we're the champs, and we're just going to keep releasing things and paying people very little and float by. And, you know, that only worked for a few years. And, you know, now they're sort of, then they had to go and, like, you know, once E.T. came out, then they had to just go pile them all up in some dune in Nevada or whatever the story is.
they recently had I don't know if you guys watch X-Play, but a little while back they actually had an episode devoted to the E.T. game and trying to find the secret stash somewhere buried deep in Nevada or something along those lines. It was pretty
really?
Amusing.
That was like a little skit?
Basically, yeah.
They took a whole bunch of cartridges and buried them in a landfill in Nevada.
Yeah.
Back in like 88, 89, somewhere around there.
So it's ironic. They made their own Area 51 out of E.T. Well, go ahead, Toby.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to ask Rob this, and Ian, I want your opinion on this too. You know, a lot of the things that I've been seeing with the current generation of gaming is them pushing the technology and the graphics at the expense of creativity. Do you guys see that as, you know, being a major kind of down factor with the video game industry as it stands right now, or?
Yeah, I would say that I think that probably 80% or maybe not as much, 70% of games nowadays are like, you know, the designers are kind of sitting around thinking like of what kind of cool movie that you're going to watch instead of actually a game that you're going to play and interact in and like have cool cut scenes and Definitely. And I think a lot of people are feeling that now. Like, I mean, at least people we talked, like I talked to at conventions and stuff, that who love retro gaming, and you ask them why, and they say that, well, the old games, you know, they had some heart and soul, and gameplay was there, and the new games are like, you know, insane graphics, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. I picked up Resident Evil 4, and I thought it looked amazing, and I couldn't move while I was shooting my gun, and I just got mad and, like, traded it back in because I thought, well, this is crap. You know, I can't run around and shoot at the same time. Heck, I could do this in Doom, you know? But
yeah.
But then other games look amazing and are playable. A game I picked up that I traded in for is God of War. I don't know. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about new games here.
Sure you can. Yeah. Yeah, well, I figured we'd end up working our way up and eventually talking about the new games, so go ahead.
Yeah, but there are games that do kind of, you know, sneak out that have awesome gameplay, and, you know, yeah, it's tough because the imagination is, you know, is like, there's always something to be said when, like, you don't have a lot of money or, like, a lot of... You have kind of constraints and stuff on you. That's when you sort of seem to shine a bit, you know, and kind of pull things together and the 11th hour and stuff. But you know, when you know that you're going to have the most awesome looking game possible, I don't think sometimes it always helps the driving force there.
Yeah, I'm certainly a proponent for gameplay over graphics. A lot of the games that I've played in the past, even if they didn't look perfect, I liked playing them. You know, I'll give you an example here. The first Devil May Cry that came out. You know, it wasn't exactly sparkling graphics, but it certainly had the gameplay aspect.
Oh, and it was awesome, yeah.
It was an amazing game. And you look at Devil May Cry 2, and they tried to do graphics over gameplay, and it didn't exactly play off too well. Then they went back to what worked with Devil May Cry 3. And another example for you, there aren't too many games out there that actually come out with new ideas these days. You know, everything's exactly the same. Everybody's either, you know, this really, really cool dude with guns shooting at demons... Or a sports game, you know, or there's somewhere in between. That's it. There's got to be more Katamari Damacy's out there, you know, more in that, like, you know, like challenge the ideas of gaming and give you something that seems so simple and yet works so well.
Yeah, I think honestly, the only company right now that is continually striving to do original games is Nintendo.
Yeah,
I mean, look at what they've done with the DS, for example. I love my DS. I mean, it's probably the most unique game system I've ever played, just because they're challenging the developers to come up with original ideas for a new platform. That's going to happen with Revolution. You're not going to see that with Xbox 360, and you're not going to see that with the PS3. You're not going to see, you know, developers being challenged to create new styles of gameplay to challenge the player. You saw it periodically during the, you know, once the PlayStation came around and things like that, but I've always looked at Nintendo's products. I mean, that it sounds like I'm being the show for Nintendo, but they just make good games. They don't care about the graphics. They're not, you know, concentrating on the newest technology. They're concentrating on making something that people are going to be able to just pick up and play.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the case with the Marios. Like, I'm glad that they're going back to the old-fashioned Mario-type game with this new Mario DS coming out. That looks like it's going to be, you know, like a nice old-fashioned side-scroller game, something that you really don't see every day, that's going to be more like the Mario games we grew up in love.
Yeah, and it looks like it's taking the 3D aspect of the new technology and putting it in a 2D world. And that looks like that's going to be fun.
Yeah, if only Sega could take that example and start putting out good Sonic games again, but that's just me.
Actually, they did. They did a game for the DS called Sonic Rush.
Oh, yeah?
That's old-style Sonic the Hedgehog using both screens. Oh, man, it's fast.
I gotta look into that. I got a couple friends with DSs. I'll see if maybe one of them has that, because... I'm not too much of a portable gamer, so I didn't pick one up, but I could definitely borrow that off one of my friends and see if it's it holds up to the old ones.
Yeah, we talked to the guys at Digital Life about Sonic Rush, and that'll be coming up in the next episode. They're talking about the game and some clips as they introduced a new female character that seemed kind of cool and stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the first. Well, I've seen like the models for this character. It seems like one of the most original characters they've come up with since, like, you know, Cream, you know, or before that. And I'm being incredibly sarcastic about Cream because that didn't exactly float my boat at all. You know, I mean, like the last female character they came up with that I actually enjoyed was Amy back for Sonic CD. You know,
yeah.
They got to actually think about the characters before doing it, not just look for cute factor.
Yeah.
If you're going to create a new character, you know, give them something unique. Look at Tails.
Yeah.
Tails was a good example. You know, they gave him the ability to fly. Knuckles could, you know, do stuff. It's just when you add something to an existing franchise, make it something that if people pick up the game, they're going to go, hey, that's kind of cool. Maybe I'll try that.
And going a little farther on the arcade track here, I think that's sort of what made arcades popular again back in the 90s, because you started seeing games that actually added upon its previous incarnation again in the arcades. You know, you saw a game like Street Fighter II, then Street Fighter II Championship Edition would come out with new characters that actually were playable, that weren't playable before, that were fun to work with. You'd see 3D games like Tekken coming out that actually, you know, gave you an entire world to work with by still having, you know, playable characters that were actually fun to pick up and enjoy. And that's something that arcades sort of lost in the late 80s, that they sort of recovered again.
Yeah, definitely Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat saved the arcades in the 90s. I think the reason why it didn't sustain longer is probably because everything was so expensive. They were like charging like $1, you know, a game for like some of the new ones and stuff. It was kind of hard to, for little kids and stuff to drop quarters in them. But that was a good help. There always seems to be something to bring people back to the arcades. You know, we had kind of like a lull, and then like DDR kind of came out, and then everybody was like back dancing again and stuff. And as long as there's like a gimmick that sort of suits like the need, you know, like even something simple like Gauntlet or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where it's like a four-person game and you're all sort of standing within elbow proximity and getting a goof around, and you know, it's your pizza parlor and stuff. You know, that's something that was hard to emulate on like a console, you know, for a long time. So you know, even now, I don't know, you play like Halo or something with all your friends, you know, that's, I don't know, to me it's not the same as like Gauntlet or something.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. I think right now we're seeing a mild resurgence, not nearly at the level we saw it in the mid-90s. You know, DDR and racing games seem to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, I fully agree with the fact that, you know, they started getting way too expensive, because I was one of those guys who used to be, you know, over at the arcade spending $2 on games of NFL Blitz, and realizing afterwards I just spent $2 on a game of NFL Blitz. You know, what am I going to do now? So, you know?
That's why the Laserdisc games never lasted, because they were like $1 a pop, and you play Dragon's Lair, and if you didn't push the joystick in the right direction 3 or 4 times, you were dead. And so, you know, if those games would have been like a quarter, those Laserdisc games, man, people would have gone nuts, and they would have lasted for a longer time, or at least until the machines all broke down a couple years later.
Yeah, well, Laserdiscs were not exactly the smoothest technology in the world back then. So,
but those are all the collectible ones now, heck.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, we got Dragon's Lair, Space Ace, Cliffhanger. There was a bunch of other ones. I wanted to touch again on the arcade track and throw another one of my history of gaming. My parents actually owned a video arcade.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was going to throw that out later, but I figured, you know, we're talking about arcades. So I got to see a lot of these games as they came out. Street Fighter II was really popular. That was probably our biggest one.
And that was a hard one to emulate on consoles because of the controllers, like with the buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was hard, you know. I didn't mean to jump in, but just like, you know, if you make it hard to emulate at home, then of course it's going to be better in the arcade.
Yeah, and it wasn't until the Super Nintendo that they were able to actually do that, and then it took off like a rocket. I mean, I think that's where, you know, of course Nintendo made the misstep with Mortal Kombat, but, you know, for the most part, console translations of arcade games since the introduction of the NES have been pretty close to arcade perfect. They've at least managed to get them, you know, down to that level, you know, where they didn't have to sacrifice and cut out a lot of the gameplay to give people the same experience.
Yeah, well, to this day, I still think like the only controllers that have ever really emulated the fighting game experience that I had in the arcades well enough were, like you said, the SNES and the PlayStation 2. Because when I sit down and play a PlayStation 2 and I can use those joysticks like I used them, you know, over in the arcades, it feels like home again. Like the Street Fighter Anniversary Edition, which I have at home, that has a special version of Street Fighter 2 on it with like almost every single one of the versions of Street Fighter 2. And then Street Fighter 3 is really, really fun to play. And I can just sit down and, you know, play with my friends for hours because it doesn't hurt my fingers when I'm playing it.
So you play that with a PS2 controller?
Yeah, with the PS2.
Oh, we gotta get you an X Arcade dual.
I was just gonna say,
either get
him an X Arcade or have him, you know, pick up one of those.
You gotta get one of those. You'll never go back.
Yeah,
at least for the fighting games.
I've seen them at anime conventions. They have a couple pads usually set up at a couple of the stations because you know there's usually a gaming room for all the all the animes and. They had one on Marvel vs. Capcom 2, which is the whole reason why I didn't end up using it. But other than that, I've seen them in action. They look amazing. They certainly emulate the feel very, very well.
Yeah. You can never. There's something about those hap buttons and joysticks and stuff that you know never sort of translate over the same way. And you know, which is okay, but. You know, that's good. I'm a Street Fighter fan, too, and that little collection came out. I was kind of jazzed, although I couldn't figure out how to watch the movie on it. I don't know. It said, like, on the box it had, like, a movie on it. But,
yeah, it's in the extras. It's in one of the special features. But trust me, just get the DVD because it's a terrible dub.
Oh, okay.
And plus, they cut out a lot of the more graphic scenes in it, like the Chun-Li shower scene, which was so popular for years. They completely cut out and a couple of other scenes here and there because, obviously, it's got to be for the kiddies.
Yeah. Good old Chung Lee.
Getting back to what Rob was talking about the X Arcade, the nice thing is you buy an X Arcade, if you want to use it on a console or something like that, all you got to just buy an adapter.
Really?
Yeah. It works on everything. Like even the Dreamcast, they have adapters for.
I love my Dreamcast.
They're actually, X Arcade, I might as well show them some love because they are sponsors on my site. But, they just released a trackball, too, which you can play. Finally, I dug up, like, some of the classics and played,
Marble Madness.
What's that?
Marble Madness.
Yeah, you know, I suck at Marble Madness, and it really pisses me off.
I'm pretty bad at it, too.
But I'm good at Crystal Castles, so, you know, that's one trackball game I like. But,
Centipede?
What's that?
Centipede?
Oh, yeah. Those are great. But, Centipede, Millipede are awesome, you know. But that is something that is kind of cool. I mean, I don't know, you know, like how, you know, what you're getting for Christmas and this and that and your listeners. I forget we got listeners out there. Hi, listeners. you know, if you do got some extra spending money and you're wondering, you know, what the heck to do with all these games that are pissing you off, there are ways around that as far as controllers and, you know, and the only thing is, like, the really cool ones that have, like, the spinner and the double joysticks and, like, the trackball, those are, like, kind of expensive, but, you know.
Yeah, how much are X Arcade sticks usually?
They run, the solo one is $99. I was actually just on the website.
Okay.
You can get them cheaper.
I think the dual is like $129.
Okay. Well, also for my listeners who can't spend the money on that and do like the feel of a PlayStation 2 controller, just go to Radio Shack. You know, if you like to play your emulators on your computer. I just found this a little while ago, and I'm definitely picking up one of these for myself. There are connections that you can do to make your PlayStation 2 connectable to the USB. So your PlayStation 2 controllers, you can, you know, play all your emulators with the PlayStation 2 controllers, and there you go, you know? If you don't have money for your X Arcade stick, but definitely, if you have an X Arcade stick, use that instead.
Does it vibrate?
I think it might, if you can set it properly, but I think it might be, like, a special extra edition that you can do for that. But.
Well, that's cool. That'd be funny. I've never played a, you know, PC game with a... Yeah, or anything with a controller.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about PC games at all?
Oh, we definitely are.
Tribute?
In fact, that's actually a nice transition there. Now, I mean, the first thing that I was introduced to as a kid was the Commodore.
With 64 or 128?
Commodore 64.
All right, awesome.
My elementary school had Apple IIs and Commodore 64s when I first came in. And they actually had Mario for the Commodore 64, which was interesting to say the least, but plenty of other great games on there. And what were your favorites back then? Like, what were your favorite old school PC games?
Well, I mean, For me, like, I had a Commodore 64, and I just went nuts. The game that really sort of made me never want to sleep again was the Ultima series, Ultima 3 and 4, from Lord British and all those guys. I don't know, there was something about, like, I think, you know, that's probably one of those games that really early on had, like, a whole world. You know, like, right now, like, the massive multiplayer games are real huge, and everybody's like, wow, you know. World of Warcraft is so amazing stuff, and it's like, wow, you know, like 20 years ago I was playing, like, you know, I was in Britannia and walking around talking to people and stuff. Obviously it was on the computer, but that really sort of opened up my imagination for at least, you know, sucking me in and stuff. I mean, you know, there's some other ones, Beachhead or Raid over Bunglin Bay. I don't know how obscure those
are. Raid over Bunglin Bay, I don't remember that. Oh, yeah, Ian?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go because my headset's dying. So.
Ah, all right, cool. All right, well, anyway, well, thanks for joining me, Toby.
Toby, tell us your favorite Commodore 64 game before you leave.
Mail Order Monsters.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, old EA game. One of my favorites.
Awesome. So. All right, well, to say the least, chances are you'll probably be on eventually one of these days again. So.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
All right, well, thanks for joining me, Toby, and I'll see you on the boards.
All right, good talking to you, Rob.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for having me, Ian.
No problem, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it would not be a Geek Speak without at least one sort of technical difficulty. At this point, when I went to hang up the phone on Toby, I also hung up the phone on Rob. So we lost him for a quick second there. For those of you who are just joining us now, which is sort of impossible considering this is a podcast, this is episode 15 of Geek Speak, the showcase spotlight on retro gaming and whatever else comes to mind. And at this point, Rob called back and I was able to get him back. So here is the rest of the episode, me and Rob talking gaming. Hey, Rob?
Hey.
There we go. Okay, yeah, I lost both of you when I hung up over there.
That's okay.
All right, so yeah, going back to the Commodore, so I'm assuming that there were separate contracts between Nintendo when it came to the PC and the console that allowed them to be able to have these games available for the Commodore?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, well, Commodore did a smart thing. They sort of took games from all different... I mean, at that time, there was companies all over, you know, like EA and Activision and... And I don't really remember a lot of, like, Nintendo games on my Commodore. Maybe I just kind of, you know, never got those or something, but they were sort of smart about, you know, making games available or making the technology, like, available so that people can program onto their systems and you know, for me, the Commodore was, like, that was a big one, and I had my first modem on a Commodore.
Oh, my,
like,
God.
300 baud and, like, a BBS and stuff when I was a kid, and, you know, to think about, like, you know, DSL and stuff now, like, versus that, you know, was pretty insane.
Oh, please. Well, when I first got a computer, I was on a 14.4, and now using my DSL, I can barely even remember those days, to say the least.
Yeah, they're it's all old news, you know.
Yeah.
Well, this is now I feel like, you know, I'm sorry. I just want to apologize to Toby if I cut him off too much or something. I just kind of, like, when you threw out these questions, I just kind of, you know, got excited and jumped in and stuff. So.
Hey, it's all about conversation, and we've certainly had a great time here, and I'm sure Toby had a great time as well.
Yeah. Well, we gotta you know, make sure we talk about interesting things for the fans. What kind of things are your fans? Did they send you any suggestions or anything to, you know, touch on? I feel like, you know, you and I could talk for, like, 3 hours about geek things.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, you know,
oh, definitely.
I want to get scared and, know, scare anybody away.
Like I said, I'm not leaving tomorrow like I thought I was, so we have plenty of time here. So if you want to talk about things other than gaming, once we're done with gaming here, we could certainly switch that over. But
okay, cool.
Before I do that, as you probably know from listening to the show, my first computer was Macintosh Performa 575. All right, that was past the Apple IIs and all that, you know, back in that past the early days of Macintosh. But one game on there, and I'm sure you probably never heard of it, that pretty much addicted me to the genre of, like, Castles type games, Castles Siege and Conquest.
Yeah, I never heard of that one.
That one, I think it was actually just Macintosh exclusive at the point, and back when they were actually allowed to do that, you know, when there were some games that were just Macintosh or some games that were just Windows, and you were stuck with that or not. And Castle Siege and Conquest was like the typical like RPG type game where you started out as this particular member of like ancient Britannia, and you had to try and capture all of Britain and become king of Britain. And it was so much fun and so addictive, and the graphics were so primitive, and yet I could probably pick it up today and enjoy it.
Yeah, this. I mean, it's amazing how some old games, you know, are still great. You know, like people have a hard time. To me, I kind of equate it to like movies. You know, you watch like, you know, Casablanca or something. It's still awesome, and then you watch you know, Aeon Flux, which has, you know, all the money in the world and technology, and it's like junky and stuff.
So I know.
It's like, you know, if people put the time, you know, I don't know what it was like, because I know, like, I'm not so sure if they had, like, testers like they do now with games, you know. It was probably like, hey, we're just going to show our fellow game guys, like, our game and test it out and stuff, and, mm-hmm. You know, but there was something kind of going on a little different, and obviously, it was, for every awesome game, there's probably 10 flops, but,
yeah.
you know, those are guys just trying to make a quick buck and have an awesome box or something, but, yeah, that's good. I've just Googled Castles. I noticed that there's a part two of that that came out in 92.
Oh, really?
Trying to get a picture in my mind as you were talking about it. But
uh-huh.
So like, how many, like, did you, like, do your homework and stuff? Or was that, did that game just kind of kill, like, all your work and stuff?
Well, I remember, like, whenever my friends were over, we would start a campaign, and we'd start going, and then we'd realize 4 hours had passed, and then we realized 5 hours had passed, and before I knew it, you know, it was like 8 o'clock at night, and either the friends needed to go home or whatever, and then I'd say, all right, see you later, and then before I know it, I'd be back on the game. It was one of those games where just once you started it, you could not finish it, and it was so hard to beat, too. Like, I only remember actually finishing the game about 3 times, and that was on, like, the normal setting. It was like one of those games back in the day where all games were hard. You remember that?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that sort of helps the classics, is that, like, you never solved them. Like, Devil May Cry, when I got to the end of that, I was like, well, this was fun. That was about 16 hours gone by. Let me go ahead and trade this back in.
Yeah.
You know? But I'll never solve Centipede, you know. I mean, I met some guys who have solved it, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's they're tough. And if a game... I mean, obviously, it can't be so hard that you're just, like, mad and you throw it out or something.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing that maybe some of the companies nowadays should look into. You know, I mean, as awesome as it is finishing a game and stuff, it should be pretty hard or something. I mean, I think the massive multiplayer games are kind of cool in the respect that they're sort of kind of open-ended and everything, you know, and that kind of gives them a kind of a shelf life, a longer shelf life and stuff. So I think that's a really good idea as far as, you know, technology and dreaming up things. So of course, we have Lord British to thank for the massive, you know, it kind of bugs me that he doesn't get more credit for that, because, you know,
yeah.
Ultima Online was like one of the first ones to do sort of the multi-massive play. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I know it's got two MNs.
MMORPG, and I have, I don't know what, I don't know where, whether it stands for, you know, Munchy Meats of Pastures Green, or whether it stands for something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, still, like, I mean, we know for a fact that without the arcade genre, Xbox Live would have never happened. You know, it's that association of being able to go to an arcade and play with your friends that's transferred over to a thing like Xbox Live, where you can play with a guy who's in Taiwan and talk to him and all that. The only difference is that you're not actually seeing his face, and God knows how long it'll be until that happens. That could be like, you know, PlayStation 9, you know?
Well, having Xbox connected to the internet or any of the computers connected to the internet, I mean, when Doom, Doom is, for me, is like a retro game, or Doom 2, when that first, when you were able to do like death matches and stuff, I forgot what they called them, if it was a death match or something for Doom 2, but like, that was like a pretty big deal, where you're just like running around killing, you know, other people and stuff, and typing in little messages and stuff, and so yeah, when you're... Well, Xbox is doing a good thing with that, and I think it's cool that they're actually calling their new thing like arcade, because it, you know, at least it keeps the word arcade kind of cool, and seems like this year there's been a lot of things. Mania TV's got like a show that's called, you know, something arcade, and it's on retro gaming, and
mm-hmm.
it's cool to see that. You know, I know, like, I've been doing my thing for a couple of years now, and I know there's other people that have probably been doing it for 10 years or whatever and stuff, but
I'm glad that, like, you know, Xbox said, hey, we're going to take Gauntlet and make it, like, playable online between, like, you and three of your friends in, like, other countries and stuff. You know, that's you know, pretty cool. I haven't played that yet because, you know, I don't have, you know, an Xbox or a 360
Welcome to the family, because I don't have an Xbox. I'm not planning on getting an Xbox 360. If anything, I'm waiting until PlayStation 3, but chances are I'll probably wait a little bit to get that, too.
Yeah, that's my next year's Christmas present to myself, be a PS3. But I mean, you know, most of the games that are great are on all three consoles. So, you know, I mean, when you mentioned Katamari earlier, that's one of my really favorite games, like the recent years and stuff. And I think it's kind of cool that it's only on like PlayStation, you know. So.
Well, I love the fact that like it sort of reminds me of like the old games, that like Arkanoid and stuff like that, where you know you had to actually take skill to get a specific point at a specific time or get a certain amount by a certain amount of time, or else you were screwed, and that's it. You know, if not, you just got to start over. That's it. You know, and so many games these days are just so continuous. There's no replay factor in them.
Yeah. You get knocked off the road, and then you just kind of pop back up and keep going. And I like that challenge. That Arkanoid, that was now if only somebody would come out with a cheap spinner that I could play on my main in my house, then I'd be kind of jazzed, because that's like the only thing missing, you know, for like. You know, my main games and stuff is the spinner for Tempest and stuff.
Well, I still need to get some main games, but what I have right now, I've been absolutely destroying my Genesis ROMs through Gens, and my SNES ROMs through SNESZ or ZSNES. There you go. And I've been like absolutely going through all those retro games lately, and it's just so fun. You know, I never owned an SNES when I was a kid. I was a Genesis kid, and going through all those SNES games now, I see what I missed, and there were a lot of fun games for that. Like, for instance, Bust a Move.
Oh yeah. Well, Bust a Move was great in the arcade too. Was
exactly.
That started in the arcade, right?
Yes, it did. Yeah. It started in the arcade. It's actually I'm glad I mentioned it, because actually right here at the college, over at the student center here at the college, they have an old Neo Geo with Metal Slug 2 and Bust a Move 2 on it, which is to say the least the one that I usually end up going to when I'm down there.
Yeah, that's the laundromat near me had like something with like Metal Slug and Miss Pac-Man and like right next to it. And I was, any time I went to do like laundry or the mail, I was in there dropping quarters.
Yeah.
Metal Slug 2 is good. SNK, I mean, just to segue, like Playmore and SNK and stuff, they've done a good job of sort of like taking some of their older games, like their fighting games, and making them playable via the internet and stuff like that too in recent years. Well, we talked to them at E3 last year, and they were talking about that, and I really get kind of jazzed when, you know, like older companies and games like Intellivision Lives. When we talked to Keith not too long ago, he was saying how they're taking, like, I don't know if you've ever played any Intellivision games, but they had sort of like a touchpad thing going on for like their football games and stuff, and you can do like little play. So they're sort of like doing DS games that are going to have like the touchpad and like the screen, so you can kind of emulate some of the old games too, you know. And it's kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much kids are going to go bonkers over some of those graphics. Or, you know, sometimes the gameplay. You know, because the 2600 television, as fun as they were back in the day, the arcade games were kind of looking a little better and stuff back then. So,
well, I got to tell you, I cannot believe that kids are going out and paying $20 for Super Mario Bros. 3 being, you know, re-released on the Game Boy SP and stuff like that. You know, because the fact of the matter is, all you got to do is go online, and there you go, there it is. But $20-$30 they're charging for these games. Chances are, there aren't going to be too many people that are going to spend that much money on them.
Well, I bought one for my nephew for his DS.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, but did you think you'd be having to pay $30 for a game that's, you know, that old now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, those. I'm sure that because your show is Geek Speak and everybody on here is probably a geek listening, they probably know where to get like all the, you know, all the emulators possible.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You know, if you don't, then of course you're gonna have to go to, you know, GameStop and pay some money, and you know, if a game is great, you know, spend the money. I mean, you know, like, I got no problem with, you know, great games people buying great games. It's, you know, when I spend $60 on, you know, like the Xbox 360 games now, like all the launch titles are like $60, and like, you know, none of those games are going to be that great. So,
oh, I know.
You know, maybe Quake or something, but
there's like three launch titles with every single system that are actually like worth playing.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody says Perfect Dark and Halo 2, of course. Like, and the Call of Duty is like the ones my friends. You know, I actually do associate myself with some modern gamers.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to branch yourself out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love modern games, but you know, I do my show about retro gaming because I can't really compete with, like, you know, an IGN or GameStop or GameTrailers.com or something, you know, because those guys have money and I just have my love and passion, so.
Now, on my previous show, which I recorded about an hour before you were on, I talked about the Generation Next, the Generation NEX, which was just released, which is a clone of the original Nintendo, which you can get for about $60. Now, obviously, for a retro gamer, this has got to be great because there are a lot of people out there whose Nintendos haven't worked in years, and now they might actually have a chance to play their old cartridges.
It's funny. I was just talking to my buddy at the comic shop about that today. Yeah, well, we're in cahoots, me and that company, Messiah, who's bringing out the Generation Next. We actually just ran a contest for one of our lucky subscribers to win, and we just had, like, one of the most recent episodes is, like, the drawing on air and stuff. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but...
I haven't seen that yet, no.
So what I did is I went over after the contest. I was like, all right, let me play one of these things, and I think it's pretty good. It's I mean, it's a very strange, like, the NES license has sort of expired or whatever, you know, it's been 10, 15 years or whatever the duration is, and so companies are allowed to kind of do this now, and the thing is tiny. It's like it could fit almost in, like, your back pocket, and you can put in the NES or the Japanese, the Famicom games, and they're... Controllers are like real modern, and they have a wireless controller. It's really smooth. I was playing with it. The only hitch so far is that it's not like 100% compatible. And so like if you're hardcore, you're going to play some games, and you're probably going to see some like blips on the screen, or maybe a sound that doesn't, you know, function right, and you might be kind of bummed. But like I think, you know, for the most part, it's pretty good stuff. And the people who submitted from our contest, most of the comments were like, hey, my thing just burned out, or I'm getting tired of, you know, dumping alcohol on my cartridge or whatever to make them. And they say it's compatible with, like, old controllers and Game Genies and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and the guys, I've talked to the designers and the presidents and stuff, you know, I've been in communication with them, and they seem very committed to... making the best product they can with you know their resources. So I don't know. I'm hoping they send me one to review. You know, because I just kind of played one in the office for a couple hours, and I enjoyed myself. Of course, the game I played was Mario. I played that in Tecmo Bowl for about an hour. So
God, Tecmo Super Bowl. This is another game that I just talked about over an hour ago. Tecmo Super Bowl. Whenever my cousins were over, we used to have Tecmo Super Bowl tournaments and just, you know, sit down, play it for 2 or 3 hours, and to this day, it's still a fun game.
Yeah, I can't. When we interviewed the people behind the Tecmo that released like the greatest hits or whatever, they just released it for like the Xbox or something. Man, you know, you got to put this out on PS2, and also, you know.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I definitely end up picking that up for sure, because although a lot of people say that might have actually been the downfall of football right there. As soon as they got the NFL license, then that led to the monopoly these days of, you know, Madden having it all to themselves and not being able to let anybody else do football games properly and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. Sports games for me have always been just kind of fun to play around with for a short time, but... Yeah. Because I just find it more interesting to watch sports and play sport video games. So I don't know. You'd have to ask your sports geek person that kind of analysis.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, actually, it took me until now or a little bit before now to actually branch myself out, because I was almost solely a sports gamer when I was a kid. You know, it was all like Tecmo Super Bowl or pro hockey for the NES or NHLY for the Genesis and that sort of stuff.
You don't sound like a geek to me. Are you really?
Oh, hey, now, come on.
Geeks don't play sports games.
Hey. I've made it perfectly clear that I am a geek who likes sports, and people are just going to have to live with that.
Every time you do, like, your sports analysis, I'm always thinking, he must be reading off some teleprompter, because there's no way he's following the Knick games and stuff.
Oh, my God. Hey, I do Cyclones games, you know, on a regular basis, I do Cyclones games, so.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No. That's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine. If people don't want to believe I'm a sports geek, that's just fine. I'll just go and cry in the corner.
Has anybody, okay, viewers out there, or listeners, I'm sorry, has anybody, if you've seen a picture of Ian, send it to me, my email, because I'm dying to know what the guy looks like. He's like this mysterious man. He says he's a geek. He seems very knowledgeable.
All right, tell you what, man. Go onto the Comic Geek Speak forums, okay?
Okay.
All right, go on the comicgeekspeak.com/forums. Go into the post a picture of yourself page. I'm I_M_sci-fi. You'll see a picture of me.
Wait, not so fast. I can't type that.
All right. Comicgeekspeak.com/forums.
All right, comic. Well, we'll figure it out later.
We'll
get dead air here.
Exactly.
You know, with me typing and stuff.
Yeah, but you'll be able to see. Actually, one of the pictures is me in a lab coat at an anime convention conducting a forum on Adult Swim.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that I do on a regular basis at the anime conventions over here in New York, Anime Next and Anime Boston. I do a Adult Swim panel, an American Animation panel, and we just started up at Anime Next this past year a panel on manga influence on American culture, which is pretty interesting.
Oh boy, that's everywhere. The discussion should be what doesn't have manga influence. that would be hard to find out.
Oh yeah, tell me about it. Now, one thing that I definitely want to mention about gaming, the fact that games are much more violent than they used to be. That much is a given. I mean, back in the days of the early retro games, you never saw blood, you never saw any real like punching other than like karate for the NES, and that was barely violence to say the least. That was just like one sprite kicking a guy in the nuts, and that was it. But these days, things are much more graphic. Do you think it was simpler times then, or do you think this is just like an evolution into what America really is?
Well, you know, times changed. I mean, you know, it's like MTV, you know, sort of pushed the envelope, and people sort of opened their mind, you know, for different things, and the same with games. I think the censors probably, like, let up a little more. I mean, what's the one with like King Kong and stuff like destroying buildings called? I'm like
Rampage.
Yeah, like when Rampage came out, that was like a kind of a big deal because they had like a naked people, you know, and they shrunk down and stuff. And I remember watching an interview with the designer of that talking about like how that was like such a big deal at the time, like having like a 2-pixel, you know, person naked for like a few seconds. But violence. It's good and bad, you know. It's cool if you're an adult and like, you know, you can handle it, and then like, you know, but it's bad when like, you know, governments sort of like digs up this one game and uses it for like the poster boy of, you know, like Mortal Kombat or something, and they just, you know, make it seem like, you know, games are the enemy, you know, so kind of similar to them saying how movies, you know, violence in movies and stuff, you know, make people violent. Yeah, definitely. I think that people have more acceptable to things, and maybe also like younger kids. You know, they kind of maybe as you get younger and you start playing games earlier and stuff. You know, like if you're like 10 and like playing or 5 or I don't know how old kids are now. They start playing games like 7 or 8 or whatever.
I think it's actually like 1.5 now.
Yeah, I know. I'm always like throwing, you know, something at kids here to play, but if you're playing a game when you're like 5 or 6 years old, by the time you're like 15, you need to have something really like insane just to keep you interested. I think that's like probably a big factor, like you know, just running around. I mean, hey, you know, it was cool playing Pong when I was a kid and like seeing a couple of dots go back and forth, but you know, a few years later, like we needed something, you know, to just kind of go like, oh, you know, open your mouth and, you know, go wow or something, you know, the wow factor. So I think a lot of violence sort of pushes the wow factor. But, you know, if it's like in movies, if it's like gratuitous or if it's done bad, then, you know, I think people sort of pick up on it. A classic game that's really violent that was like, I think in like the 80s is called Chiller. Have you ever heard of that game at all?
Never heard of it.
It's It's from the guys who made, I think it's called Chiller, but it's from the guys who made, like, Crossbow and Cheyenne.
Okay.
And it's one of these, like, you just point your gun and shoot. But this game is just, like, a torture chamber, and, like, you shoot, like, dead, like, body parts and stuff, and, like, blood starts shooting around. And it's pretty early. If you go to, like, the, you know, klov.com and type in Chiller, you probably see some pictures there.
Sounds like Manhunt.
It's, yeah. But that was one of the early games, at least, that I can remember hearing about that was, like, pretty insane for blood. But that was just, like, gratuitous, like, we're just shooting and it's blood. It's like a Beavis and Butthead type of thing where it's just ridiculously over the top.
Yeah.
But, like, the game I'm playing now, God of War, that I just got this week, I mean, it's violent and bloody and just disgusting all over, and it's like, you know, but it looks, it's so pretty. Like, it's, you know, people die in such beautiful ways.
Yeah, and, it's like the show, have you seen the show Rome on HBO?
No, I haven't, but the medieval, like, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, well, there, I mean, like, you see these people, like, going through the orgies and all that, and you see them going through the, you know, the streets of Rome, and you see just how, I don't know if this makes sense. I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't happen today, but it's almost like it's so retro and so elegant in just the way that they're living, you know? Like, you see them in these robes and all that, and you see them in, like, all fancy looking, and sure, they're slaughtering people, but you really don't notice that.
Yeah, there is ways to make blood and guts look pretty. if I'm playing a game in front of a 10-year-old or something, I would turn it off or
yeah.
Whatever, but we'll see more too. I mean, soon we're going to see. I think it sort of reflects, like, movies also mirror movies and games, I think, sort of mirror each other, like, you know, when you see a movie where people are, like, reaching in and, or, like, a game where people are reaching in and pulling out their spine, like Mortal Kombat, you know, then you're
yeah.
going to see a movie where people are doing that, and then, like, a game has to sort of, like, one-up that, and, you know, because both those fields are sort of vying for, like, your hard-earned dollars, you know, like, what are fans going to want to do, play a video game or see a movie, and how are we going to, like, blow them away with whatever crazy, you know, and now we got, like, the movie video game genre seems to be, like, the new thing with, like, Warriors and The Godfather coming out.
Oh, Warriors is amazing. Warriors is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't played that yet. People are telling me to check it out. I never really was, like, a fan of Grand Theft Auto and stuff, you know, so.
I was never too much of a Grand Theft Auto guy either, but I do actually want to see Grand Theft Tendo for myself, just because I talked about that on a previous episode, the Nintendo hack of Grand Theft Auto 3.
Oh, yeah, I watched that site after you talked about it.
Yeah, it certainly looks interesting to me, and I'll pop it into my Nintendo emulator and see what it's like.
Oh, what am I looking for? What page are you on? You got a trench coat on, you said?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There should be a thread on the top of the page about, like, show us what you look like or something like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the post your photos.
There you go, post your photos. That's it. Yeah, I should be in one of those pages there. I am sci-fi. Which yeah, as he starts looking at that. But let me know when you find it. Let's put it that way. But no, the thing that gets me, though, I've always really found, like, the violent video games is sort of like, that's my release, you know, like all the frustrations of everyday life and all that, you know, just go out that way, and I don't then, you know, have the urge to go out and take a hacksaw and, you know, cut somebody's leg off or anything like that. I wouldn't even think of doing that in the first place, but there are some people out there who think that if you play these violent video games, that's the images that you're going to start getting. And unless you're, like, mentally disturbed, it really shouldn't happen that way.
Yeah, you know, it's we asked the Go Army guys about that at the IGN Live interview about the violence video games. We figured, like, hey, why not, you know, ask these guys, because it's Army and violent and stuff. And the guy that we interviewed, you know, he made a good point. It's like, you know, games can be, like, as violent as possible or whatever, but, you know, it's up to, like, the parenting and, you know, like, to sort of, like, help, like, the reality and the non-reality or whatever. I'm probably paraphrasing this and butchering and stuff, but, you know, I think that, like, to point the finger at games and movies for violence as the cause of people being violent, I'm just, you know, I find that totally absurd. I think it's, you know, parents who just, like, forget that they're parents and they just, you know, they don't sort of pay attention, and then, you know, and then, of course, like, you know, these bad things happen and stuff. I mean, like, with watching the Michael Moore's movie, you know, I think that kind of made things obvious with, you know, media and parents and stuff and people not listening. So if you're a mom or dad listening to the show with a young kid and they want to play Warriors for Christmas, you know, you go ahead and tell them it's got rated T on it and they can't play it till they get older. And when they play it over their friend's house, which they will, then you go and explain that, you know, they can't run out and go do those things, you know. They'll be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go going around and, you know, joining gangs and start tattooing things and all that, because that's just the wrong thing to go. That's just the wrong thing to do, especially if you live in Coney Island. Whatever you do, don't join a gang and start spray painting things. That's a bad choice in life.
I heard that they've been going nuts with the renovations down there. What'd they do, like chop out one of the subway stations and make it like all thirsty and stuff?
Stillwell Avenue, the main Stillwell Avenue station, has been completely redesigned, and it's gorgeous. And actually, you don't even know you're in Brooklyn when you go into Stillwell Avenue anymore, because you think it's like Seattle or Boston or something like that. It just looks so elegant and so beautiful. There's no stores inside it yet, but there will be. Like, they have storefronts there. But they haven't really sold the space yet. I mean, obviously, you know, the Cyclones are there now, and they're going to be redesigning, I think, like, the area around Astroland to try and make it look more beautiful and all that. They're trying to make it look like a better place.
Wow, that sounds great. I mean, a lot of people are sort of, I think, were mad, like, New Yorkers were mad when, like, they took all the porn shops out of, like, 42nd Street and stuff. But
Well, only the ones who like porn, that is.
You know? No comment, but... But, like, you know, I mean, we have that out here in L.A. I don't know if your viewers know, I live in Los Angeles, and, like, every part of Los Angeles or San Diego that used to be bad and crappy neighborhoods gets, like, renovated and becomes, like, tourist attractions now, it seems. And, you know, I think it's kind of cool. I just hope that they keep some of the, you know, the weird tattoo parlors and, you know, piercings, like, along the boardwalk. And hopefully maybe there's some arcade that's still sort of living with, you know, some... You know, Coney Island was one of the arcades where I played this game called Hercules, I think. It was a pinball game, and it was like twice the size of like other pinball games, and like it had almost like a softball was the ball. It was kind of a novelty thing, but I remember I played it down in Coney Island or something, and like, you know, it's always great to know that, you know, novelties exist, you know, in that particular part of the world.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, they still have plenty of places, you know, that had the skee ball and stuff like that, and you know, a couple of arcade games here and there. And you can usually find the older arcade games at places like along the boardwalk. Like, they'll have they'll have some new ones, but then you'll find like the original, like Cruisin' USA, and there was even one that had Sonic the Fighters that I was in this past summer, and a couple of other, you know, older ones, like the first Marvel vs. Capcom or the first Marvel Superheroes. You know, not exactly ancient, but Back when the arcades were still surging, let's put it that way, and you can still find those all on the boardwalk. You just got to find them.
Yeah, well, I'll have to take a look. You know, next time I'm out there catching a Cyclones game.
Oh yeah, well definitely. Next time you're out there catching a Cyclones game, make sure to look me up, because for all you know, I could be on top of you. So. Because the seats.
I hope you edit that out.
Yes, I know. Well, I meant sitting on top of. Oh, never mind. No, no. The deck on top of where the people usually sit. That's where the press box is, and that's usually where I end up watching the games, because I'm doing the games from up there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm glad to see your pillar of your community.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wish. Oh man. All right. So if only people actually knew that Brooklyn College Radio did the games, then maybe we'd actually have a little bit of listeners. But anyway.
Well, stickers. Give out stickers at the games. There's some people love freebies.
There's a reason why I podcast Geek Speak. Let's put it that way. But before I got started with the podcasting, I had, if I'm lucky, 3 listeners, and now I'm up to about 80 or 90. And you know, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and as long as I'm enjoying it, then I'll keep putting it out.
Well, I'll try and send you some of my viewers. They're all over the world, because one thing about retro gaming is it's huge in like England, and people post things on like boards in like Italy and Spain, and I have no idea what they're talking about. I just have to assume they're complimenting the show. But
yeah.
Generally, the feedback is always like, "Hey, love the show, hot chicks hosting or something." is like, you know, like roughly translated from foreign markets and stuff.
Yeah.
Or pretty girl host or something. And
I got an Iceland guy. I got a guy from Iceland who I talked about on the last show sent me a message on the forum, and you know that it's interesting to hear that you know I'm already reaching out to Iceland. So
yeah, it's really good. When I went to I know we're just gabbing here, but I went to the podcasting expo or Portable Media Expo last month in Los Angeles here, and I wasn't really expecting much, but it was just like it was pretty bumping, and there's just like everybody's there, and they had their little mics, and they're recording like shout outs, and like people were recording shows there, and everybody I met was real cool, and it's real nice to sort of reach out and touch people. It's you know, my friends seem to think the podcasting is just going to be a fad, but I don't know. I'm trying to push it. Last year I used to call my show CoinOp TV a web TV show, but now I've changed it to video podcasting because it sounds more accessible.
Well, podcasting is the type of term that I was sort of hoping wasn't really going to catch on because there's so many people like myself who don't use pods to listen to their podcasts. You know, I'm either listening to it on my computer or I have my CD Walkman that I make a CDRW of, put a couple of MP3s on it, and you know, listen to it on the go. I'm not an iPod guy, but podcast seems to be determined to caught on.
Yeah, well, thank Apple for that. I mean, if there's one thing they've done, it's marketing. Is they're just geniuses. So
yeah.
I was glad to see what's his name is like Man of the Year, whatever with Time, you know, or one third Man of the Year, whatever the
Bill Gates.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Bill Gates, his wife, and Bono. talk about a nice trio over there.
Yeah, I the picture really looks like disturbing. It looks like Bono's face got stretched out or something. It's a little strange. I don't know.
And Bono's in between Bill Gates and his wife, which is also interesting there because the wife doesn't seem too happy about that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of covers, okay, just briefly, did you pick up The Wizard this week? Have you seen the cover yet?
I get it delivered to my house, so I did see the cover briefly, but it'll probably come to me in about a week and a half.
Okay, it's I won't say anything, but like, let me know when you get it because the cover is like, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know.
Well, I've seen the thread on the Comic Geek Speak forums describing what they describe about 52, and I shouldn't have read it, but I did, and now I just want to read 52 even more.
Oh, the DC thing,
yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to save me. You know, you can call me up again for anime or comics or sci-fi. You know, anytime you're looking for, you know,
I'm looking for people, so that definitely works.
Although
man.
Your fans might write in and say what a ego like opinion goofball I was or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be curious to see what kind of feedback you have because normally when I'm in front of the camera, like I just try and talk as little as possible and let like. You know, one of my gals talk on camera and stuff, so it's not every day I get to sort of, like, chat and voice opinions and, you know, spiel and stuff. So thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, no problem, man. I mean, that's what I like about these showcase spotlights. You know, I could just, you know, go off on a tangent with a guest and, you know, just wherever the road takes us, that's where I went. I mean, we started off with arcade gaming, and now we're on podcasting, so there you go.
Well, we got to talk about pinballs before we
definitely.
Before we talk about anything else. Are you a pinball fan?
I was when I was a kid. There were a couple of pinball games around here that I would play. There was an arcade in Sheepshead Bay. I'm sure you're familiar with the Sheepshead Bay area from when you lived in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Over by the UA movie theater, where it is now. There's an arcade called Funtime USA.
And, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and Funtime USA was basically my main arcade because my best friend lived right around that area, so we'd always used to just hang over there. And they had an entire section that was pretty much devoted to pinball. And, you know, whenever I had a chance and I had a couple of extra quarters, I'd pop it in and, you know, play it. And there was a Terminator 3, of all things, pinball machine over here at the college for a while. And there was also a... oh, man. What was that Pamela Anderson movie that she was in? Barbed Wire.
Barbed Wire, yeah.
Barbed Wire pinball game was over here. Pinball's fun, you know? It's one of those games where, like I said, if you got an extra quarter, it's a nice thing to play.
Yeah, if anything, like when it comes to arcade and stuff, I mean, one thing about MAME and emulators and all that, or legal emulators like GameTap, I should show them some love because they're kind of new if you don't know about them. But
I've heard of them, yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of cool because it's kind of like a legal emulator thing where you can kind of play games and stuff. But as far as pinball goes, that's like my heart goes out. Like when I hear like sound effects from pinball machines or something. Like, I just, like, have to run over and see, like, who's playing, what's going on, what game it is. And I wish there was a way to sort of emulate that. I mean, I know it's kind of impossible, but, you know, if anybody ever wants to donate some pinball machines, call me up, because I'd love to have some, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you watch, Hack Point 5?
Hack Point 5.
It's a vidcast.
What? No, I don't think I do.
Okay. Because on one of their most recent episodes, you can go to their episode page. I think it's hackpoint5.com or something along those lines. If you just Googled Hack Point 5, you'd be able to find their website. But on one of their recent episodes, the guy, their mod guy, built an arcade cabinet from scratch. And I think only spent $100 on it and ended up making an arcade cabinet that also had the pinball flippers on it, so that you'd be able to, you know, take your emulator, put it inside the cabinet, and be able to use the flippers when you're doing your pinball games and all that, and it would still feel like a natural pinball game.
Well, yeah, they have like a pinball emulator thing, and the actual X-Arcade, most of the joysticks have little pinball buttons on the side and stuff, you know, you can play.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, you know, it's a little different because you're not, like, bumping a thing around and stuff.
Sure.
But, yeah, there is some talk of, like, one of the companies doing sort of, like, a flat screen thing of, like, a pinball, like, emulator that, you know, I don't know if that's ever going to come out, but, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, you got to, if I ever talk you into going, like, a fun spot or something up in, well, see, you go back to, what, Massachusetts or something for your family and stuff?
My girlfriend's up in Massachusetts, yeah.
All right, you got to go to, you put this on your calendar, fun spot in June up in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Go visit your girlfriend, and then for a day, and then come down and hang out with the fellas, and we'll play some games, and it's heaven up there. It's like, I went to this arcade in June for the first time, and they have a once a year, like, an arcade tournament, but the arcade is open all year long. But it's just anybody who's near that area at all, and check out Fun Spot. It's like, just like you've stepped back in time, and, you know, bring a members only jacket or something, because it's got everything.
Oh boy! Wow. Well, that, I mean, that certainly sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. Where exactly is it again? You said
it's in Weirs Beach, New Hampshire.
Okay.
The website is. Are we allowed to give website?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
We're uncensored here in podcasting land. That's what I like about it. It's Fun Spot. NH.com, I believe, as in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the recent episodes, actually the one I just posted, I sort of combined an interview with Donald Hayes, which was at Fun Spot, as well as the Messiah drawing. I kind of smashed them together. So, go, everybody who listens, let's all go in next June and hang out and spend some tokens.
Well, I mean, honestly, if I can get myself up there, I'd love to be able to maybe possibly, you know, set up an event or something like that. But
yeah, you can set up are you portable with your sort of recording and, you know, your microphone and stuff?
I'm planning on getting a portable setup sometime soon. Right now, I can obviously, you know, I can use the setup here at the college. You were able to take out, you know, mini discs for the weekend and that sort of thing. But I'm going to put some money into a portable recorder, whether it's like a small little like Zen Micro MP3 thing, or whether it's going to be a actual like MP3 recorder. I'll wait and see, but I'm going to look around for it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to the Consumer Electronics Show next month in Vegas, so I'll keep my ears open if I see some cool gadgets for you. Because I actually want to start doing some audio recording myself too, so I'm going to look into some portable stuff too.
Oh, great! Yeah. Well, for now, as you probably know, my home setup is not exactly desirable. I got to get some sort of mixer or something like that, so I'll actually be able to hear myself in the headphones when I'm recording, because that's a bit of a hassle, you know. like it's so weird, like recording for so long, hearing yourself, and then going home and using your USB microphone and just having that set up and not have any sort of additional, you know, setup, and it's just so weird not being able to hear yourself in the background, you know.
Yeah. Well, but, it sounds like show sounds professional when it comes down through the streams to me. So,
well, that works. Yeah, the 0.5 episodes are the one I do at home. Right now, I'm over at Brooklyn College, and that's why it sounds so professional, because we've got amazing equipment here. That I mean, definitely props to Brooklyn College for the equipment. I mean, like I said, it's pretty much as professional or possibly even more professional equipment than you would find at most radio stations across the country.
Wow. You should do some sort of, you know, retro gaming event there at college. You got a voice at that school? People respect you?
It's certainly possible. I don't know. You know, I'll voice it around and see what's up. But we don't really have a lot of space around here. That's the thing, you know. The area that's devoted to gaming over at the student center is the basement of the student center. And, you know, there's a couple of pool tables and a couple of arcades. And that's basically all there really is room for. But I don't know. You never know. I might ask around and see what's up with that. I do have gaming events from time to time here, but usually it's more console, like PlayStation 2 and Xbox, because that's easier to do. So.
Yeah, that's common. Everybody's always down for some sort of Halo tournament. One of the places I go down here, Arena Lounge, every once in a while, is that's one of the things they do. Halo tournaments, and you know, it's cool and all, but I don't know. You know, for me, first-person shooters, you know, have gone a little repetitive and stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I still need to get GoldenEye one of these days, because I have an N64 at home just there, and I know that was one of the ones I never really got.
That's what I'm going to give myself for Christmas, a nice brand new refurbished N64 system what top five games should I get if I go out and buy an N64 system this year?
Okay, well, obviously, Mario 64 would definitely have to be on there, because Mario 64 is amazing. Zelda 64.
All right. I'm not going to write these down. I'm going to re-listen next week and then write them down.
Okay, that works. Obviously, you know, GoldenEye, number three. If you're a wrestling guy, WWF No Mercy is by far probably the best wrestling game ever made for any console, period.
Wow.
I will put my money on that. It had the grappling system that basically made THQ famous in the wrestling games, and that was the one that pretty much perfected it.
All right.
And for number five... Mario Kart. Mario Kart 64.
All right. Isn't the Arconia of Time or something? Isn't that an N64 game? Or am I
mixing
that up with this?
Zelda Arconia of Time. I think that actually is Zelda 64, although there could have been two on that. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
You also got to make sure that if you are going to play Zelda or like Perfect Dark and stuff like that you have the expansion pack.
Okay. I'll look into that. Because I sort of... leapfrogged a bit. Like I was playing arcade games and then like the Atari 2600 or whatever, and then Nintendo, but then like I started playing games on my PC with you know, Duke Nukem and Doom and you know, Ultima and stuff like that, so I kind of like let a lot of those consoles kind of go, and it wasn't until like, you know, PlayStation that I kind of got back into them and stuff. So there's a little bit of a blip where I'm kind of like missing, you know, some factors, but all my friends had those, and I, you know, I used to go check them out. So.
Yeah. One of the interviews that you had on your site was with the guys behind the Midway Treasures. Is that correct?
Capcom. The interview that I did.
Was that Capcom or Midway? Yeah, that was Capcom. Okay, there you go. What do you think about these Treasures collections coming out for the main systems now? Whether it be Midway, whether it be Capcom. The company is coming out with you know, brand new collections of the old retro games to try and give them a new generation feel.
Oh, it's the best. It's first of all, it's so cheap. $20 for like 20 or 30 games or whatever they are is great. It's great if it's done right. Like the Jack Specific Inc., whatever they're called out here in Malibu. We interviewed them like way back in like 2004 when they started doing the little 5-in-1 like TV game joysticks with like, you know, Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And those, like, I don't know if you ever played one of those, but you know, they don't look so hot. And they don't
I've seen them at Best Buy.
Toys that were kind of like put games in them or something. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, we interviewed them and they're great people, but you know, they needed to work on those. But the newer ones, the companies are like seem to really be behind them. The Capcom one is really great. That's got Ghosts and Goblins, which is one of my favorites, Ghouls and Ghosts, which is like the sequel, and then the third one, I'm forgetting the name, but it was like an NES game that they took and they stuck on there, which I thought was pretty awesome. I actually asked the guy when I was interviewing him if there was any games on there that weren't in the arcade, and he said no, but that one was, you know, so I snuffed him. But those are really well done, and the cool thing about them is that, like, it lets you save games. Like, you know, I mean, you can continue games. Like, Ghosts and Goblins, you can continue in the arcade and you drop quarters in, but, like, being able to save them or save your high or come back and stuff like that, that's a cool feature. The Tattoo Legends one, or Tattoo, everybody says it differently. How do you pronounce the T-A-I-T-O? Do you have a pronunciation on that one, Space Invaders Company?
I think it's Tattoo, at least from what I've known in the past, but I don't know.
All right, yeah, it's that one's pretty cool. That comes with, like, Bubble Bobble and Space Invaders and Phoenix, which, like, you know, I used to just, like, go nuts at, like, the car service by my house playing Phoenix. Are you a fan of Phoenix at all?
Phoenix I never really got into, but I don't know. Maybe if I gave it a shot now, I'd think differently. But when I was a kid, I never really got into it too much.
It's tough because it's like buttons instead of a joystick. I think that kind of threw people, but yeah, that's on that collection. And I bought that for my PlayStation 2, and I hook up my X-Arcade with a little adapter that's $20, and me and my buddy go nuts on those. And you know, when I think about, like, how many hundreds of dollars I wasted on courses playing them now, it's, like, great. The only problem is that, like, the collections seem to come out, and they always seem to be missing, like, a few awesome games.
Yeah.
And then you kind of wonder, like, well, is there going to be, like, a volume 2 or 3? And I hope that everybody goes and buys them so they become popular. I mean, they're cheap enough. Like, when you're at GameStop or EB Games, I don't know what you have back east, but for...
We have both.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody should just grab one of those for $20, either Tattoo or the Capcom, the Namco one is all... I'm forgetting that one, too. Of course, that one has, like, you know, Ms. Pac-Man, Galaga, one of the greatest games ever, and Galaxian. That one's good, too, and they sort of, like, went into the menu system and, like, put on, like, some Journey songs and some, like, you know, old cheesy 80s songs so that when you're flicking through the menu, there's, like, you know, all this... It really gives, like, this cool vibe and stuff. The only problem with the Namco, the new one, is for some reason I couldn't play with my X-Arcade, so I...
Oh, really?
I was kind of bummed. I have, like, the older version that allows me to play, so...
Wow.
Sorry, my voice is kind of getting a shot. You go ahead and, like, say something for a few minutes. Let me take a sip of my iced tea here.
All right, cool. What I found interesting was that were the in the latest Midway classics that they're branching out into the even some of the 90s games, like Hydro Thunder and San Francisco Rush, and the sort of games that sort of were there in the resurgence of the arcades, as opposed to just, you know, the old fashioned ones that everybody knew in the 80s and the 90s. Like I said, because I'm a younger kid, I you know, my arcade games that I remember so well were the, you know, the Hydro Thunders and the Street Fighters and that sort of stuff. And you're starting to see those in these collections now, and they're sort of like, okay, we've covered the 80s, now let's move on to the 90s.
Yeah. Well, see, Midway. Yeah, okay. Now they're on number 3 now, so they've really said, like, look, we're gonna, you know, we're releasing these, we're gonna sell them, we're gonna promote them, and like volume 1 had, like, Smash TV and, like, Joust and Robotron, and then, like, volume 2 had, like, Mortal Kombat and some of the newer games, and then, yeah, number 3 has it's 7 or 8 driving games, like you say, Hydro Thunder,
yeah.
Astro, whatever, and the only hitch with those is, you know, you probably want to get a steering wheel. So,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not really sure what the setup is. Like, you know, I guess, you know, they have, like, steering wheels for PlayStation and stuff, or Xbox. So, if you have a steering wheel, I think it's awesome. But, yeah, and those guys, what they do is they go back and they get, like, concept art and they stick it on there as, like, bonuses. The Midway Classics 1 collection had, like, interviews with some of the creators and the designers and stuff, and I'd watched some of those before I started doing my show, CoinOp TV, and I was, like, kind of influenced with, like, wow, you know, this is great, these guys, you know, I got to track some of these guys down myself and ask them my questions, so... I've only been able to track down a few designers. They don't really, you know, they kind of hide away up in San Francisco and stuff, but...
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they pop out at events.
Now, the latest Sega collection, the Gems collection, I don't know about you, but I'm not exactly too impressed about it because, like I mentioned in a previous podcast, if you're gonna have a Gems collection, at least have Knuckles Chaotix on there. And the fact that they can't seem to emulate their own games really does not exactly make me too much of a fan of Sega's collections right now.
Yeah, the Sega ones, I haven't played those. There's a couple. There's actually 2, I think. There's, like, a Sega, you know, anniversary, and then a something other, and then there's also a Mega Man thing coming out soon, or if not out yet. And if they kind of rush them, you know, and you can kind of tell, it's kind of like, you know, when a movie comes out and it's just like some real slim, crappy version, and you're just like, whoa, you know, I mean, where did the heart and soul of this movie go? It's you know, like you gotta, when it comes out on like a DVD or a game gets released on a collection, you gotta, you're selling to the fans, and the fans want the best, and especially if it's a game that's 10 years old, if it's not emulated or redone nicely, or faithfully or something. I mean, sometimes faithfully involves like bugs. I mean, you know, you emulate Strider without the bugs, it's a totally different game.
Yeah, well, like I mean, it's amazing that they had to. I mean, they had to stoop so low as to put Sonic CD from the CD version, not from the Sega CD version. I mean, come on. I mean, for God's sakes, just go to the guy who made Gens and say, "Hi, would you like a job?" You know, because if this guy could do it, you'd sort of think that the company that originally made the game might be able to sit down and actually get things right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, big companies, they usually snuff out. You know, who knows, there's probably some deal or some bitterness. You know, he probably got snuffed out on some deal and wants nothing to do with them or something. So,
I guess. I don't know. So. Just all I know is that hopefully by the next one, if there is a next one, they'll learn how to emulate 32X properly and put Knuckles Chaotix on there, because that's actually one of my favorite Sonic games, period.
Yeah, I'll you know, Sega, if you're out there listening to this, you know, listen to Ian. He's got a point. So... I will say one thing though, that the new Sonic game that I just played was horrible. The Shadow or whatever it's called.
Oh God! Oh no! Oh, you had to mention that. That takes everything that was my childhood and bastardizes it.
I played. Well, I went to a launch party for one of my sponsors is Nubitech, and they do like all these controllers for all these different things, and they have this really cool Sonic Shadow controller, which is great. Looks great. It feels great. But I was playing the game at the little party thing, and I was just like, wow, this game really bites, you know, and it's tough. I'm sorry if I hit, like, a sore part. You know, I see that you're a Sonic fan. I'll have to mail you, like, the keychain freebie I got, you know.
Well, look, all I got to say is you give a hedgehog an Uzi, and you completely cut off the Sonic community.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of those, you know. I mean, obviously, the comic is up to, what, issue 200 now or something?
Yeah. It's been around for a long time.
Those.
Yeah. Now, since I mentioned Sonic, I got to mention this. What do you know about the hack community out there? You know, the guys who take the old ROMs and make brand new games out of it, or new versions of the old games. Have you looked into the hack communities of, like, Sonic or Mega Man or Super Mario at all? And what's your take on it?
Well, when I started CoinUp TV, I was thinking, like, you know, the first layer or tier is going to be like arcade game related things, stuff like that. And then I figured once I get enough content to that, I would sort of branch off into console stuff. And so I'm still sort of branching into like some of those with interviews and people that I've talked to. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm out there emailing and talking to people and stuff, But the thing that's popular, like at shows and events, is are these, like, they, I guess they call them homebrew games, where I think that's what you're talking about, where it's sort of like kind of like that that one you mentioned earlier there, the
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, something like that, where it's like kind of like some new designer creates a game specifically for like an old system, and I don't know if you've seen any of those, but some of them, the people really go all out on like the boxes and like the artwork and stuff. And I think those are great. Anybody who wants to talk about their game that wants to be on my show or whatever, you know, email me or something, because I want to hear about them. I think they're great. One of the things that Messiah is doing with the company doing the Generation X is, in addition to playing the NES games, it functions as new games as well. And I'm not really sure what they're going to do with that, but, like, you know, technically, if you're looking for sort of, you know, kind of a revamped system to create 8-bit games on, their thing will work on that. So if you are some sort of hack guy, you know, and you're, you know, room making games, homebrew games and stuff, you know, look into that, because that's new, and they're encouraging that. Another really awesome collaboration was the Atari Flashback 2 that came out, which I don't know if you've seen it, but it looks like almost like a 2600.
Seen that, yeah.
Yeah. What they did with that was I don't know what school it is, like some school in Boston or something, but they had like some sci-fi techie guys like create like, you know, 10 games or something just using like the technology of like back in the day, and they slapped like those games on there as like a bonus or something. So you get like 30 like old Atari games like Haunted House and E.T. and all that stuff, and then plus you get like these 10 new games that people made at some college, and I don't know if they got paid or not, but but that's, I mean, I think that's great because, you know, it's for them, I'm sure it was like a huge learning experience, but you know, it just kind of pays like a nice tribute, you know, to the kind of the old and the new, two minds at work there. I wish just if Atari, anybody who listens to this from Atari, I wish you'd send me a flashback so I can review it. I want to get my hands on one.
Well, I remember hearing about a guy who was making a Homestar Runner game for the Atari, and I don't know whatever happened to that, but I remember somebody was making, you know, a game from scratch out of that. But there's an entire community actually out of Sonic 2 hacks. The beta for Sonic 2 was found once upon a time from like this Chinese website or something like that, and this guy by the name of Simon Y put up a website detailing, you know, the differences between the beta, what didn't make it from the beta into the final. There are like three complete levels that were not in the final version that were at least in the beginning stages in this beta that was found. And there are people that have actually, you know, pieced together either their own versions of those levels or complete redesigns of previous levels and made completely new Sonic 2s out of it, which is really, really interesting.
Yeah, are the games fun? Have you played them yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm really into this. In fact, I'm a member of the boards over at Simon Wise page. And there's actually this one guy who's putting out this project where he's literally completely repiecing, starting with the Sonic 2 engine, taking everything out, putting his own levels in, his own art in, and his own characters in. And basically, you know, taking Sonic and adding, I think, Shadow into it and a couple other things. He programmed it so that you can use three characters as opposed to two. And it's a completely new experience, and it looks absolutely amazing.
That's cool. Well, I'll have to look into some more of those. I've only sort of heard about those, and you know, I think probably the first guys who sort of offered that like hacking thing, like to my knowledge, is like, I know Doom 1 or 2, like they kind of came out with like the levels editor and stuff, and I remember that just kind of flipped the whole gaming world upside down when you can like go in and make your own levels and pop your own monsters in. And I'm sure if you were an aspiring game designer, that must have just like flipped every button possible for you at the time. So it's really cool when people open up the doors like that, and you know, the hack guys, I guess they have to get in and do it on their own, but some of the games, you know, will let you do that too. So,
all right. To sort of wind things down here, since I know you are as much of a comic nut as I am, I want to touch on some comic book video games for a minute here. It's not exactly been the best pickings in the past couple of years when it comes to comic video games. It's gotten a little better with, you know, like the Ultimate Spider-Man or the Spider-Man movie games and stuff like that, but for a long time there, on the Nintendo, on the SNES, on the Genesis, there weren't exactly good games. Was this just finding a property and going with it?
I'm sorry, my call waiting came in right on your last word there. Can you?
I was saying do you think this is just like going with a game, going with a property and running with it, and not really caring about the like wellness of the game, like how well it's actually put together?
Yeah, that's, I'd probably say it's my first response was, like, companies, I mean, maybe I'm a little jaded ever since I moved out to California and, like, I live in, like, the showbiz town and stuff, Hollywood, but, like, for me, everything revolves around, like, marketability and money and things like that, even though I don't strive for that myself, but, like, if a company knows, like, okay, hey, we've got Spider-Man or Superman or whatever, like, they know that it's going to sell, like, X amount of games or make X amount of dollars, and I don't think they always put, like, the best team on it or they rush it, you know, they, like, okay, their deadline's going to be, you know, so-and-so date because we got to make sure we get it out before, like, if the Superman game has to come out before the Spider-Man game or something, you know, kind of like with movies, too, so they kind of rush, and So you get these games that are kind of not that great, I do remember in the arcade, I was always a big fan of the Avengers game. I don't know if you ever get to play that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, back when I was a kid, I used to love that game I think it was Whirlwind in that, or was there somebody else?
That was Whirlwind is one of the bad guys.
Yeah, a whole bunch of Iron Man guys were in that, actually, if I remember correctly. I realized that in the past, a whole bunch of Avengers villains have been Iron Man villains also. That's where I knew most of them from.
Yeah, I think they had like Stiltman and a few Iron Man guys, and I just remember for me playing like the Vision he was always one of my favorite characters as a kid. So companies are probably like and even today I think that some companies like they kind of know what's up, like obviously when Peter Jackson says, okay, I'm going to be involved in the Lord of the Rings video game, the companies say like, okay, well now it's got to be bitching. We got, we got the greatest director around sitting in our laps here. Yeah. What are we going to do? But, when you get like some company, I don't know if there's like an Eon Flux game or something, but is that a comic? What's like a comic game that's coming out now that's kind of recent?
I could definitely say Ultimate Spider-Man, because Ultimate Spider-Man is actually, in my opinion, the first true comic book game, because that's actually taking the art as done by Mark Bagley and transforming it into a game.
Yeah, so that's come out from Sony, right? That's not, do you know what company, is that Universal or?
Oh boy, I think it's Sony, but I could be wrong on that. Oh, whoever has a Spider-Man license, I can't think. Wasn't that Activision for a while? I'm not sure if they still have it though.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, like, whatever company, they put their heads together and say, look, we've got a gold mine property here. And I think it kind of helps maybe that the Spider-Man movies are popular too. Like, if the Spider-Man movies probably didn't do well, I'm sure whatever Spider-Man games came out, because there's a whole lot of Spider-Man games that are crappy.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, with the movies, it sort of heightens the expectation of, like, audience and fans, And then I think companies are getting a little more smarter and hip, and, as they say, as, like, younger people start getting promoted and, the maybe older people, old-fashioned, maybe not so much old in age, but, sort of old-fashioned ideals, those guys kind of move on, and if you're hip and you know what's up, you'll do like a really kick-ass game. But some people just think like if it has a cool box, it's gonna sell. And not now, not anymore, not with forums and the internet and people reviewing games like the day before they come out and stuff, or a month before they come out.
Or guys going onto their favorite torrent site and getting it weeks before it comes out. But that's another story.
Gosh, I hope they don't kill torrents. That's my lifeblood.
Oh God. Well, I certainly do not hope. I certainly hope that they don't kill torrents, because, for one thing, for me as a guy who doesn't watch much television and doesn't have a TiVo, that's my lifeblood right there.
Yeah, and I live off of sort of podcasting now, with just sort of because I don't have TiVo either, so I can't watch shows at like a certain time. So I just podcast things. I mean, obviously they're not normal shows, but stuff like the time, it's a shame comics, because you and I are comic fans, and we've lived in a sorry state of mind with like movies and games for comics. It's been depressing, and only recently, things have sort of picked up. But then you get like the Hulk movie, which is horrible and stuff.
Oh, God.
So
Well, some people did enjoy that, but I actually made it my mission not to see that movie, because I didn't want to see how bad it was. So and also I certainly know what you're talking about. I mean, come on, David Hasselhoff is Nick Fury.
Wow, have you seen the Ghost Rider teaser yet?
I have, and I gotta say, that movie sold me only on the fact that that is Ghost Rider. I have never that looked just like the cover of about 8 of his books.
Yeah, it looks, it's great. I'm really worried with like Nicolas Cage, but
yeah. Well, thank God he's not playing Superman.
Yeah, Superman. I will be there day one.
Oh, I will definitely be there as well, because Brandon Routh really, really looks the part, and he sort of looks like a cross between that guy from Rushmore and Christopher Reeve. So, when he's got those Clark Kent glasses on, that's pretty much what I'm picturing.
Yeah, and there's going to be an awesome Superman game. I mean, I don't know what company's working on it, but they have to.
There's got to be a better one than Superman 64.
Well, that was supposed to be fun, right? That one? That is
in some people's minds the worst game ever made to X-Men for the NES. So
yeah, maybe I'm mixing up Superman games. But like the X-Men Legend games, like I think that like, you know, because the X-Men movie did great, they had to come out with like an awesome X-Men game and you know, X-Men Legends is pretty good. It's not really my cup of tea, but you know, so I guess what I'm saying is come out with an awesome comic, which seems to be a hard thing to do these days.
Yeah.
Then come out with an awesome movie for it that makes a whole lot of money, and then we will see an awesome video game for that character comic. That seems to be the trend.
Yeah, well, hopefully Fantastic Four 2 will be a little better, and henceforth, hopefully the game will be a little better.
Well, you know, Jessica Alba is just the best, so I'll watch anything with her in it.
Oh, God. You had to mention Alba, didn't you? Oh, well, she wasn't too bad in Sin City. Let's put it that way. So
yeah, I've only seen a few minutes of Fantastic Four.
Okay,
I saw like some bad bootleg, you know, bought off like some Chinese guy or something off the street, and you know, so horrible that you know, I just couldn't watch it. But I'll have to rent it eventually. But yeah, Fantastic Four is an interesting book because it peaked so long ago, and then like it just kind of peters around here and there, and then kind of like. You know, I mean, when Walt Simonson was around, it was like a very high point, and John Byrne and stuff. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. It hasn't really, a lot of Marvel books, like I said in one of my emails, you know, I've kind of given up on a lot of Marvel books.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the emails you read, I mean, one of the emails I read on the air definitely said that. But I think when they killed off Reed Richards, that's when I knew they were trying to look for something, you know? I mean, like that, when you kill off the lead of a team to try and spark some interest in a book, that's sort of signifying that you have no idea where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah, the killing off people is kind of like old now. Like I'm hoping that Crisis doesn't kill off Flash because I really like Barry.
Well, I hate to say it, buddy, but it might be looking that route.
Yes.
So
spoiler warnings in case you know any comics.
Yeah.
In case any accidental comic geeks turned into the retro, change their station or whatever, and are listening.
Well, I'm going to be posting about this on the Comic Geek Speak boards because of Toby being on, and that's actually where I found him in the first place. So who knows what's going to happen with that. Let's make your viewers happy and give them that contest you were telling me about.
All right. Well, the last contest we had was pretty simple. You go to the site and you type in your email and put a little code in, and we had a drawing that we did on camera for a Generation Next system. So now I'm going to sort of up the ante a bit, and I'm going to offer, this is the first time out, so whoever's listening to this, you're the kind of first person hearing about it. I haven't even posted anything on my internet. I've just kind of discussed it with a couple of my associates. But what I'm going to do is like a video submission, and what I'm looking for is people to do a spoof of like a game, any game that's like over 5 years old, to try and make it retro. And I'm going to try and limit it to like 4 minutes, and you can do like a spoof or a music video or an animation or a drawing or a flash cartoon or something that you can send me on a CD or a tape or something. And what I'm going to do is I'm lining up some hopefully some good prizes with some companies. I can't really reveal that because nothing has been set in stone yet, but it'll be going for like a few months starting in January, so details will be forthcoming soon. I guess I should think of a really cool name for the contest. Maybe Ian, you can give me like a suggestion.
Hmm,
I can, you know.
Let's see here. Oh boy! Wow, you put me on the spot here.
Where's the Jeopardy music? Don't you have that on your card?
No, I wish I did. Oh man, I should have thought of that before I got here. Retro and spoof. Retro and spoof. I'm trying to work with that in my head right now. You know, if I figure something out, I'll send you an email. Because on the spot right now, I probably can't think of anything. But for all I know, as we're signing off, I'll think of something. But who knows? And you heard it here first on Geek Speak.
Yes, brand new. And what I'm going to do in January is I'm going to post a thing that I did that was about 4 minutes, and it's an ode, my ode to Galaxian, and I tried to kind of make a funny Galaxian spoof thing, and all I did was videotape some game stuff, and I did a voiceover for it. So, you know, I'm not looking for anything big budget or high production value, just kind of like fun and, you know, fun and silly. And what we're going to do is we're going to, like, the three finalists or something, we're going to air their spoofs on an episode, and maybe I'll get, like, one of my lovely hosts to help me host and talk about them or something, or, you know, and if you live in L.A., we'll be happy to get you on the show, but, you know, it seems like everybody I talk to now lives far away, so.
How about select spoof, going with the end of the Konami code when you're using two players?
What is it? X what?
Select spoof.
Oh. Well, I'll put that in the brain cycle there.
All right,
for
that works.
An idea.
Yeah, because that's like the only thing that came to me right there, so why not?
Yeah, well, it's a video spoof.
Four minutes
video spoof, coin-op TV, retro, 5 years old games, and we'll figure it out from there. Announcements coming soon.
All right. Any upcoming coin-op TV things you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, the next episode I'm working on posting was from Digital Life in New York, and we got it's about a 12-minute episode that my contact Robert F there in New Jersey shot and edited and stuff and host, and it was, I don't know if anybody went to Digital Life show, but it seemed like it was really cool. I wish I could have gone in person. Then the episode after that will be the Galaxy one, and then I've got the hump that I'm in right now is I've got tons and tons of footage of interviews and just like very little time and server space to get them all out. So we're always looking for new sponsors so we can buy more server space. if you like what's going on and you want to see it more or faster production or something, then give me a holler and donate, and I'll put your banner on my site.
Awesome. Awesome, indeed. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can I give some shout-outs?
By all means.
Because this is like a radio show, right?
Yeah, but basically, well, this particular episode is just going to be straight podcast, but I'm sure that whoever listens to it will be able to hear your shout-outs, so go ahead.
All right, let me put on like my, you know, my rap voice or something. You know, hey, y'all out there.
Yeah,
I
want
to give some shout outs from CoinOp TV to my posse out and watch us. Game, Messiah, Game Attack Radio, Rachel from Spike and Rachel, Mike, photographer, blank logo, John, Rob, Michelle, Becky, and anyone else associated with CoinOp TV. Shout outs to you. Much love.
and Tupac Shakur is rolling in his grave. Oh, boy. And I want to make an announcement here as well. I have a tentative interview scheduled with the creator of Dr. Tran. Those of you who listened to my show heard me play a portion of that on an earlier show, and one of the creators of Dr. Tran looks like he's probably going to be on GeekSpeak when I come back from break, which will probably be in January. So sometime in January, you'll be hearing Dr. Tran on GeekSpeak. So there's my little information there.
Who does the voice on your intro? Is that you?
That would be me, yeah.
You got to get like a chick or something.
I know. Well, one of these days, I'll get one of the people here at the radio station to do that for me. But that was literally done, and here's a little behind the scenes thing. That was literally done 5 minutes before my first episode. So I put that together. I put it on there, and I'm hoping that once I get a decent listenership, I might actually do a contest for a theme song, because most of the music I use on this show is compliments of anime soundtracks. So, like, Gungrave and Ghost of the Shell Standalone Complex and Helsing are pretty much the music I get my music from. So I'm hoping that when I gain enough listeners, I'll actually get a couple people out there with some nice musical talent and possibly compose something for me. Who knows?
So how does it work, like, using copyrighted material like that on podcasting? Have they cracked down on that at all, or
well,
is that just, you know, up in the air?
Let's put it this way. I'm hoping that the anime guys aren't listening, because I have a feeling that anime soundtracks probably aren't in the realm of things that people are looking for, but you got to actually have a license to use mainstream stuff, you know, like Britney Spears and, like, actual artists that are, you know, with with companies, you got to actually have licenses for that. So, yeah. But, you know, the smaller stuff, like I said, I have a feeling that anime soundtracks aren't going to mind if I play a little snippet of theirs. But if they do, have them contact me. So there you go.
All right, yeah, because I'm always curious because I always want to use, like, because I use, like, sound effects and video clips for my show. And so far, nobody's come knocking on my door. But
yeah. Well, sound effects and video clips you should be fine with. Like, if it's a small little snippet, you should be all right. But if you play an entire song, that's when they start going after you. So, yeah, that's basically the way things go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and I look at the clock, and I see it's pretty much on the two-hour mark. So I think I'm going to end things here. I definitely want to thank you, Rob. I had an awesome time talking to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't even get to say Kobe got 62 last night. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Not that I'm watching the Lakers this season, but, you know, I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, I talked – my windup this week was on Johnny Damon going to the Yankees because, oh, my dear God, did I not want that to happen. But Kobe Bryant, amazing performance. The fact that he sat down and didn't try for 70 really showed me the type of person he is, though, because when you have a chance to basically go up there in the echelon of people who have – there's only been like three people who have gotten more than 70 points in a game. And
yeah,
he could have very well done that, but he sat himself down. I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know – yeah, he's, you know, as bad a rap as he's got, I still love Kobe, and I hope the Lakers will contend, maybe somehow sneak into the playoffs, but, you know, yeah, it's...
They'll go before the Knicks, let's put it that way.
Yeah, my love goes out for Knicks fans, as I used to be one of them, but, you know.
Boy. Yeah, well, I trust me, we feel your pain, and Nets fans feel your pain, too, because they haven't been doing too well this year either.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for having me on the show. I hope your fans thought I was some sort of an authority on games, because I probably didn't sound like much. But
I'm sure they had a great time, because I certainly had a great time, and you have a great radio voice too. I got to say, like you're not one of those guys that goes on and sounds like this. So.
Well, thanks. I always wanted to be like a radio DJ guy, so this is the closest I've come to. So my dreams, every day a dream gets fulfilled.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, thank you tons for joining me today, Rob. And your name is certainly going to be in there for the future. You know, when I know what the next showcase spotlight is, I'll let you know.
Awesome.
All right. So take care, man.
All right. Take us out of here. Have a good one. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah. Happy holidays, everyone. This is going to air after Christmas. But those of you who had Christmas already, I hope you had a happy one and a healthy one. Those of you celebrating Hanukkah, Shalom. And those of you going for New Year's, well, happy New Year to everybody out there. I am Ian Levenstein. You've been listening to episode 15 of Geek Speak. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. We'll be right back. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.